and welcome to the Groovy Uncle Podcast with me, Glenn Prangnell. The Groovy Uncle Podcast takes a look at the creative output of a prolific bunch of musicians and artists based in the Medway towns. Each week, I'll be catching up with some friends, old and new, to talk about what projects they've been involved in over the years and what they're doing now.
You're listening to the Groovy Uncle Podcast.
So let's dive into the soup of groovy uncleness. In an introduction to a previous episode, I said Alan Crockford had played in more bands than anyone else I know. Well, actually, I think this week's guest could claim that particular accolade. So I'll take a deep breath and list some of the bands he's been part of. The Poprivits, the Milkshakes, the Mighty Caesars, the Len Bright Combo, Auntie Vegetable, the Craven A's, the Headcoats, the Masonics, the Adventures of Parsley, Holly Go Lightly, Dutronc, the Clique, Hipbone Slim and the Knee Tremblers, The Buckets, The Bongolian, 9-Ton Peanut Smugglers, The Beat Seeking Missiles, The Dustaphonics, Groovy Uncle and Susie Chunk. He's a drummer, guitarist and graphic designer at Art Hole Retrographics, who's created the artwork for many a record sleeve. Please welcome Mr. Bruce Brand.
It's what you do.
Bruce Brand, welcome.
Thank you, Glenn. I hope you're equally diddling as well.
Yes, I'm diddling to rather a large extent. How have you been coping with what's going on?
I haven't really noticed, to be honest.
Well, that's good then.
I'd like to say it's made not a jot of difference to my standard of living, which would be a bit of a lie because it's just a bit more boring when you go down the high street because there's hardly any shops open. But it hasn't affected my work, which is the graphic design side of things. Obviously, the musical side of things has taken a bit of a slump, but it'll come back.
So, I mean, have you been doing any recording? Obviously, everyone I've interviewed has pretty much done something for Kev Younger's Mr. Unswitchable, which obviously you and Mary have been doing. So we kind of know about that, but have you been doing anything else?
Yeah, recorded a few things with my mate Baldy in the whatever the group's called this month, the Knee Jerks, I think, kind of rock and rolly garage stuff. Did 4 days of recording at the Gizzard earlier in the year, and got a bit of my Masonic stuff coming up in the new year, basically mastering, come to think of it. Did some stuff for a friend who does library music a couple of weeks ago. He rides motorbikes around the world, or he used to, and he runs a film festival for travel films, and he does his own library music, which he usually puts in those films.
So tired, desperate to be free, no more to hide. But they can make another person out of you, and that's the reason all of this is true. But I gotta tell you, darling, what you gotta do. Just a man, and I'm still a fan. Oh, But we love you, Leanne. 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 But we love you, Leanne.
Was the Pop Rivets the first band you're in, or was it, does it go back further than that?
The first group I was in, I played live, was called Brook Farouk's Jam Busters. There's a story behind that. A friend of mine at school came up to me one day and said, "Hello, Brook Farouk." I thought, I'll use that. And then I formed this group and I thought, I shall call it Brook Farouk's Jam Busters. And we did one gig supporting the same chap's band who were called Midas. We played kind of Rolling Stones covers and we did Bad Moon Rising, Brown Sugar, Taking Care of Business by Batman Turner Overdrive, I think. Bad Company, that kind of thing, you know, usual sort of thing you play in 1975.
Was there a point when you thought, I've had enough of this, what will someone invent punk rock?
Well, we did two gigs like that, and then I just started art college, and then jolly old punk rock came along, and that's when I met Russ, Big Russ, who said, actually before that, I was in a band with him called Night Shift, which is even longer hair and more kind of heavy, tedious rock stuff. Still your Brown Sugar, I think, I can't remember, and some Velvet Underground songs, and then punk rock came along. We thought, that's a bit more palatable. We saw the local punk rock group. It was called Gash. Russ said, "Let's form a punk rock group to rival Gash," not rival Gash, because they were the only local punk rock band. I said, "Okay." So Russ and I used to practice playing punk rock songs. Then he said, "Who are we going to get to sing?" He said, "I met this punk in the town called Steve the Punk. He was a bit of a character." So we met up with him, and it turns out to be the chap who became Wild Billy Childish.
Peace.
then we rehearsed Jackson's Field, just like strumming guitars and someone playing a floor tom and Billy sort of crooning over the top. Then we managed to talk the drummer who was in night shift to play for us temporarily, like, when he hid all his masses of hair under a woolly hat. And we opened for Gash at Detling Village Hall. We played, went to the pub next door. So the pub filled up with punk rockers saying, if you don't get back on, we're going to trash the place. Oh, okay. So we had to go and play another set. And that was the... Actually, we were called TV21 for that gig, I think. But then we found out there was already a band called that. I think there's been another one since. Anyway, so we changed the name to the Pop Rivets. For a while, it was we vetoed playing in London. I think we might have played in London once. We just did local gigs, I think. Halfway through the Pop Rivets, I discovered beat music and R&B. Well, we all did. Link Ray and stuff like that. And we thought, well, that's even better. Because punk rock's okay, but it's a bit limiting in its resources, you know. I think most of the stuff I used to like from the punk days was quite poppy. It was just like fast, heavy pop music, a lot of it. I mean, even the first Clash album, there's a lot of tunes on there. I think for most of us, we only like the first albums. We like the first Clash album, the first Damned album, the only Sex Pistols album, the Vibrators, 999. They all had some cracking tunes on there. They weren't just... You know, it wasn't just that. I'm not going to let this replace everything that I used to listen to or like before. This is going to be added to it. And I might put whatever I went listen to before on the back burner or put it in a bedside cupboard for a few years, but I'm not going to just write it off because I liked it for a reason. You tend to go back to your sort of teenage stuff anyway, don't you, I assume? Well, I did. Most people do, I think. Even if only for out nostalgia.
So did you have any trouble introducing some of the stuff you wanted to do into the set? I mean, was everyone agreeable or was it was like, oh?
No, because we all had the similar mindset. I might have wanted to not do the punk stuff more than the others. I was sort of quite happy to sort of leave that behind and just use it as an influence rather than thinking, because we did one gig after the Pop Rivets. We're called the Deadbeats, which was basically Billy and Russ and myself and a drummer called Jan, I think. We played at the Medway College of Design at a 60s party that was put on. And we played covers, 60s covers and R&B and rock and roll covers. And we came in on old British motorbikes on the back of them, basically. Which didn't work quite as well as hoped because the whole auditorium filled up with smoke. And all you could hear was this motorbike. And people weren't getting out of the way because they couldn't see where these bikes were coming from.
What was it like playing locally in Medway at that time, playing that kind of music?
There was a scene. There was a bit of a scene going on. Excuse the phrase, scene. I remember there's a bloke with a haircut like a spring onion. I think we called him Onion Head in honour of that. I don't think I ever learned his real name. There was a few sort of new waivers about, you know, to give us grief and cheer us on and spit Horlicks tablets at us, which... It's a true story. We gave out Horlicks tablets at the Tam O'Shanter to the best dancers, in inverted commas. We had all this Christmas regalia and stuff, and within like 5 minutes, we were all covered in half-eaten Horlicks tablets, which were a thing, but not anymore. Because if you've ever had a Horlicks tablet, you'll probably want to spit it out as soon as possible. Except me. I think I was the only person in the world who actually liked the things. Anyway, moving on. I drove past Minster Working Men's Club for the first time since the Pop Rivets attempted to play there today. I don't know why we got a gig there, but we got a gig there and all the local punks turn up to see us. And I think we got away with playing about three songs before the owner, the main man came up and said, I'll give you 20 quid if you, what was the term he used? Stop playing now. I didn't really want to be a drummer because I was playing guitar up until the Pop Rivets. So the only reason I played drums for the Milkshakes is because the drummer they had was a kind of Hell's Angel biker type chap, and he left to manage a blood-spitting reggae band, as he put it. And they said, I could play drums for him. They said, well, get a drum kit and play drums for us, which I did. I only ever wanted to be the drummer of the Milkshakes.
Well, it's funny because you're probably most well-known as a drummer, and yet...
What went wrong? I thought I quite like sitting in the back and no responsibility. I suppose the reason being drummers are thinner on good guitarists are 10 a penny. I was once told many times, good drummers are thin on the ground. And I suppose being a drummer, there's more, you can get offered more stuff. People tend to need drummers more than guitarists. Well, the reason I wanted to play the drums in the first place, before that, when I was playing guitar, I never even took any notice of drums. You know, the drummer was just someone who sat behind me and made a banging noise. I didn't, you know, I paid it no heed. I started listening to drums when I started listening to old 60s records and R&B and rock and roll, because at the time, most of the current records had like a heavy rock beat or a disco beat, and it was too loud in the mix as far as I was concerned. And then I listened to these and I thought, there's interesting sort of drums sort of rattling around in the background. It sounded like jazz, sort of jazzy stuff. The other thing was recorded as one instrument rather than like from the 70s onwards, every drum was close mic'd and sounded like recorded in a different bloody room. There's some great old records, singles and whatnot from the 60s and the 50s. Drums sound great, but something happened in the late 60s when everything started getting over-amplified and too loud, and then they started to start miking them up. So these sound engineers came along and said, no, you've got to deaden them all and sort of take the front heads off the bass drum and all that. So they compromised the sound of the drums, the organic, natural sound of the drums, for just something they could manage. A lot of that was the cause of, well, certainly in the Milkshakes, we wanted to get away from the currently contemporary sound. Most live sounds at the time, especially the 80s, was gear sounded like a recording. It sounded like people in the old days, people wanted their records to sound, presumably they wanted their sound, their records to sound like they played live. And they, to an extent, they kind of got that, some of them more successfully than others. But I don't know, I got the impression in the 80s, people wanted to sound their live performance to sound like a recording. No, I never heard anyone play drums like that, or like on old records, like at the time. And I thought, I want to play drums like that just to be different.
Lembright combo, when was that? That was late 80s, wasn't it? Mid 80s.
84 to 86, something like that. Well, Russ had a job in an electrical shop, and Reckless Eric lived in Chatham, and he came to Russ's shop, and they got chatting, and Russ said, I play bass and I know a drummer if you want to form a group. Yeah, got a gig at the Edinburgh Festival. Basically worked out a few tunes to play up there. Chose the name Lembri Combo, kind of at the last minute, because we were mulling over names. I just wrote Lembri Combo on a drum skin just to see what it looked like before. That's how that name came about. Reckless Eric, denying the Reckless Eric moniker because he wanted to go by his proper name, but since returned to it. That's quite a good patch. We did two albums, which we recorded the backing tracks on Upchurch Village Hall on a Revox tape recorder, which is similar to the way the Milkshakes did it. Mixed the first one in my attic, and yeah, no one is interested. Two albums, single. Yes, the first one's called The Lembri Combo, Present The Lembri Combo by The Lembri Combo, and the second one's called Combo Time. Both since reissued, and we reformed in 2013, well, presumably to promote those reissues. We did one gig at the Lexington in Islington, we did one at the Purple Weekend in Spain, and then we did one in Memphis at the place thing called Goner Fest.
They say we're lucky to both be alive. Some people say we were made for each other, stuck in a fool's paradise. The two old friends that used to be lovers, I sometimes feel just like a brick in a wall, cemented in place, going.
Talking of reunions, you also got back with Auntie Vegetable recently, didn't you?
Indeed, we did. That was running concurrently with the combo. I can't remember whose stupid idea it was, but the idea was to form a group that got up everyone's noses in our local pub, the Nag's Head, because in the downstairs bar were all the cool kids, a lot of the mods, us lot and the prisoners, because we were all cool kids, weren't we? Ha-ha. And upstairs bar was full of old greasy bikers in leather jackets. And we thought, well, this small group plays all the music that us lot will really hate and the other lot won't like, because they'll obviously realise we're taking the mickey out of them. And that didn't work out, because we got encore and got to play back again. It's supposed to be like cold acid rock, but I guess we must have made too good a job of it. with Sexton fronting it, I suppose it's going to have an element of goodness.
Hello.
But it's current because you recently released a record.
We recorded an EP with the tracks at Woolley Studios in sunny Sheerness, where I'm speaking to you from now, in 1986, which saw the light of day on various Chatham Powerhouse compilations, or Midway Powerhouse compilations. And then the good folks at Spin Out Nuggets, i.e. Lee, offered to release those on the EP that they were originally scheduled to be on back in the day. And so that's out now.
If you should walk right out of the door,
the Craven A's and knocked out a fairly good album, if I do say so myself, and single and EP. Also never really sort of shone live. It wasn't, I called it the curse of the Craven A's. I think most, every time we played a gig, I don't know, something went wrong or something happened.
Well, see, I just call it the Glenn Prangnell curse, because every band I'm in seems to be cursed with things going on. Because we used to say the good child thing, that was always, there's always something that went wrong. So I think it's me, it's any band I'm in. Well, anyway.
I should have known that at the time, I could boot you out, didn't I?
You're around. If you should say goodbye to me, a bad, bad time, a bad, bad time.
Headcoats.
Yeah, I've been a bit out of touch with Billy for a few years. Well, I think I'd moved to London by then, so I don't really see people as much as often as I used to. Only we decided to form another band called the Headcoats. The name comes from a misheard lyric by the Downliner sect called Leader of the Sect, when the girl in the song gets run over by a souped-up bass guitar, and Don, the leader of the sect, takes off his headcoat. It was a deer stalker. The deer stalker, spelled D-E-A-R. It's a hat for chasing girls or wooing the lasses, apparently. So I took it off in reference. But I heard it as I took off my head cold. It was a deer stalker. But when we met him, because we did some recording with him, he said, I never sang head. He didn't tell me, he told Billy. He said, don't tell Bruce, but I never sang head coat. He says, I took off my hat because it's a deer stalker. I was gobsmacked when I found out. I thought, no! Hang on, so I've invented a word. It misheard lyrics. Not that it matters much. It's that Peter Gabriel song, Je Sans Frontier. I always thought it's, she's so popular. Now I've said that, you're never going to hear it any other way. Thank you.
Now, my favourite goes back to when I was a kid. Probably other people might have had the same experience. Was I always heard Herman's Hermits, She's a Must to Avoid, as She's a Muscular Boy. Anyway, moving on. The Masonics, of course.
Well, Mickey, the other half of the Milkshakes, he truly was a half, he started recording about the same time as the Headcoats, but I didn't want to play live. So I recorded about 3 or 4 albums with various bass players until the Headcoats played our last gig in 2000. And I think it might have been that gig, but I think it was Liam Watson from Toe Rag, who'd been recording most of the stuff. He offered to play bass in live setting if Mick was up for it, and he said yes. So that's when we started playing live. Whether or not it was something to do with the last Headcoats show, I don't know. But anyway, yeah, we've been going ever since.
Sorry, don't apologize to me. You had your chance, you won't see me again. You messed me around too long.
get weakened, a heart so strong. It's hard to believe you won't see me again. No, I'm not spending my life just waiting to hear the next lie. I'm not prepared to live my life this way. No, I'm not wasting my time just waiting to hear those same lies. There's nothing you can do can make me stay. So don't tell me you're sorry, 'cause I've heard it all before.
The Adventures of Parsley. Yes, TV themes and your film theme. Well, that's something I always wanted to do. In fact, I think even before the Craig and A's, I had a practice with Johnny Barker and we ran through some TV themes, including the one you may or may not be about to play, Maygray.
Thank you.
That's, yeah, the Adventures of Parsley, this chap Parsley plays Hammond organ, and we do TV and film things, and we haven't played for ages, but still going concern, as far as I'm aware. Yeah, we do most of the Gerry Anderson stuff, a lot of spy themes, all the obvious ones. Parsley and I also in a band called Dutronc, which is a Jacques Dutronc, mainly a Jacques Dutronc tribute band.
Holly Go Lightly.
Holly Go Lightly, yes. Well, a little surprise. You've been singing in the Head Coatees. They're basically by default, presumably, because basically it was just, they were all our girlfriends at the time. And then she pulled it out of the hat that she could actually, she played a bit of guitar and write songs. As your man Johnny Barker said in his interview, that one of the first songs that she recorded was one of yours, High Time.
Yeah,
good choice. And that was kind of by luck, because I was in the studio with Mickey from the Masonics, and we recorded a few tunes, and then we finished, and we had some time left over, and Holly happened to be there, so we recorded four songs with her, and it was a real hodgepodge of backing musicians. It was Johnny Johnson, he played bass for the Head Coats on drums. I played guitar. A chap called Phil, who's the bass player of the Clique, who also joined, was on bass. I think Mickey must have played guitar if he was still there as well. So, yeah, we all swapped instruments. You know, I played a bit of drums and John played a bit of guitar, I guess. And we did four songs, which we sent to Vinyl Japan on the back of Mickey's tape as a demo. And they said, yes, we like this, we'll release it. And they released it as an EP.
I'm gonna check every place that you might have been by. I'm gonna call all your friends, cause baby, I'm gonna die until I find you. Wherever you are, I'm gonna find you. No matter how far I have to go, oh no, I'm gonna find you. And I will, I'm gonna pack up my bag and take a walk outside, and then I get in my car and baby, I'm gonna drive until I find you. Wherever you are, I'm gonna find you.
But up until the year before last, we were still touring. She'd come over and we'd go do a tour of Europe. Buckets was a rock and roll group when I was in London, featuring French Eric on drums, Professor Blinding on bass, and Brian Cotts on vocals. Rock and roll and R&B covers for a laugh. We only played about a handful of gigs. You know, some of the Tremblers, that's my mate Saval Diddley. It used to be Saval Diddley, and the Wig Outs and the Big Wigs. There's a rock and roll outing originally with John Gibbs on double bass, since had like gazillions of bass players flogging a dead horse playing rock and roll to the masses.
We'll be right back.
Mongolian. NASA from Big Boss Man, that's his other project. He plays Hammond and is an amazing percussionist and drummer. It's kind of funky Latin type stuff. I did a tour with them a few years ago, and again, well worth catching if you see them. I'm not playing with them now, but
is that just a live thing, or was there any records?
I don't know, got records out on Blow Up Records. They've got about half a dozen LPs, I think.
Did you play on any of those?
No, he does it all himself. When he records, for the most part, he records single-handedly. He's got his own studio. Well worth listening and seeing. Particularly good live.
Nine-ton peanut smugglers.
Nine-ton peanut, again, that's Baldy. And it's playing ska and rock steady. But I said I'd only do it if it was like proper, authentic. I wouldn't want to do anything like vaguely two-tony or ska punk or any of this sort of modern stuff, because that's completely the opposite of what I think of as ska, which is basically jazz-based.
Beat Seeking Missiles.
Yeah, Baldy again.
I guess about.
Featuring Super Mick from Supergrass on bass. But that was kind of a flash in the pan. We did about three or four gigs and recorded an EP, and then that was it for that project. But not bad, nonetheless. Yeah, the Dustaphonics, yeah, it was a kind of surfy, soul-y, surf soul kind of outfit. I'm a mad Frenchman called Yvan, and now moved back to France. So not doing that at the moment. And currently, the Voodoons.
Oh, yeah, the Voodoons, yeah.
I had a nice rehearsal with them just last night. I played bass in that because I wanted to get, I was getting itchy fingers. I wanted to play guitar again. They said they wanted a bass player. And I said, did I know a bass player? And I said, well, I'll have a go. It's just an excuse to play some strings again, basically. You haven't mentioned the Clique. Archetypal mod band, but they were really good. They wrote all their own stuff, and they were actually friendly, and they enjoyed playing, and they had a laugh. Oh, well, let's say they were a mod band, because they were basically a mod band. One of the better ones, akin to the Prisoners, I'd say. I saw mod bands when they first started. When Billy and I went to check out a mod gig when the mod revival first reared its head, and just a city full of miserable-looking blokes in blazers and white stay pressed, glaring at each other, making sure they have the correct number of buttons done up.
Under no circumstances must you look like you're enjoying yourself.
Not exactly. And the band's probably competent and okay, but sounding, every band I'm ever hearing or seeing, which wasn't that many, were just desperately trying to sound like a Jam, as you'd imagine. There was nothing kind of, it didn't float our boats, shall we say. And I thought, well, I'm not impressed with the mod revival until I know it's all right to say, until I saw the Prisoners. But then they started wearing tie-dye to try and shake off their mod following. Helped about some recording a few times and got up a couple of gigs, and then guitarist left and they asked me to join. So I did that for a while, and that was, I really enjoyed it. I've been going for ages. Yes, that was the Clique. That was.
Right, so let's talk a bit about Art Hole Retrographics, your day job.
Okay, well, started off, I went to art college, did my 3 years of graphics. I didn't really learn anything there. I don't remember being taught anything. Just remember being given projects and assignments without anyone saying how to do it or the best way of approaching it. You know, they might have just said, here's a pen and a piece of paper, draw an apple. And, you know, okay. But anyway, I sort of learned most of it afterwards, doing it on the kitchen floor, doing record sleeves for the Pop Revists and the Milkshakes. Actually, the first Pop Revists sleeve I did at college, and I got on the print shop to actually make the films and the place. I saw how that was done. One of the things I hated most about it was letterpress, which I realised after the event was stupid. I thought, oh, no, I'd give my right arm for habits of a letterpress machine. I'm not allowed to operate it with any one arm, but still. Yeah, anyway, I sort of learned my trade doing lick and stick and paste up on the living room floor. 56 Luton Road, mainly. for Milkshakes Records and anyone else that needs stuff done, like the Dagger Men, for instance, which I'm going to have to rehash that soon if it's been released. I got a job when I moved to London. Got a job as at a printer's. They let me do my own stuff in between jobs. And since then, I've done covers for the White Stripes, Darkness, first album. I did quite a lot of work for Mungo Jerry, who was one of my teenage heroes, as he played with them a few times as well, albeit drums. And the reason I liked them is they didn't have a drummer.
Oh, the irony.
Yeah, and then any sort of independent labels that need a hasty record sleeve knocking up, then if they can't afford someone proper, they come to me. Other stuff, I'm not just playing bands, you know. I've done my own recordings. One of the first things I recorded at Torag was my tribute to Joe Meek, called The Orbitus. I played everything on it, I think, maybe with the exception of Second Bass by Liam. That was fun. And then I did a version of the Maygray theme, as done by the Eagles, not the Horrible Eagles, the early British instrumental band, the Eagles. Sorry, Horrible Eagles fans, but you must admit, they are pretty horrible, aren't they? Not forgetting the sessions I did with Link Wray and Roddy Dawson, amongst others.
Let's go back to your childhood, 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 childhood.
So, tell me, what's your earliest musical memory?
The bubble car song, I think. Riding in my bubble car, na-na-na-na-na, ee-ee. I'm riding in my bubble car. Beep, beep. I've heard it since, so perhaps I got it a bit wrong.
Beep, 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 beep. His heart went beep, beep, beep. Now we're doing 120 as fast as I could go. The bubble pulled alongside of me as if I were going slow. The fellow rolled down his window and yelled for me to hear. Hey, buddy, how can I get this car?
The first bit of music that stuck in my head and made me sort of listen twice was the Doctor Who theme. And I know Moles already covered this, but it had the same effect on me. But then I saw it the first time it was aired for the first episode when I was 5 years old. And a spooky opening credits and the spooky music. Yeah, it was also very claustrophobic. The sets were, because it was like a small studio and it was filmed virtually live then. But it's basically the overall atmosphere of it, that the music was tremendous. My Boy Lollipop and Walking Back to Happiness, even though they're like a couple of years apart. All the Telegoons, that's another early memory.
This or that.
Okay, here we go. Then or now?
Oh, then, every time.
Lager or bitter?
Bitter, every time.
William Hartnell or Patrick Troughton?
Tough, but it's going to be William Hartnell.
Stage or screen?
What?
Stage.
Screen.
Stage or screen?
I'm going to say stage.
Guitar or drums?
Guitar.
Car or bike?
Car.
God or no God?
I'm going to play devil's advocate and say God.
Swim or paddle?
Paddle.
Rain or snow?
Snow, every time.
Apple pie and custard or cheese and biscuits?
Apple pie and custard.
Well done.
Oh, is that it? Yeah. I was just getting over that.
I could make it longer, but I'm not.
Say topic or picnic.
What, topic or picnic?
All not whip.
Well, have you got anything you want to publicise or talk about or let our listeners know?
Oh, apparently the Masonics are playing with the Downliner Sect and the Fallen Leaves on Thursday the 20th of January.
Very soon.
That's it, really. That's all I've got lined up.
Right, so the thing is, it's your birthday in a couple of days. 4 days' time.
Is it? Damn it.
So, are you doing anything? Are you celebrating or ignoring it?
Well, we'll see, won't we? I'll get a secret party and just say it was a cheese and wine evening with no social distancing.
Bruce Brand, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you. And may all sons be vicars. It's what you do.
Thank you for listening to my podcast and I hope you enjoyed it. Why not join me next time when I'll be chatting to yet another of my multi-talented musical and artistic chums. See you then.